As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hey everybody, what's up? Welcome into the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. It is Thursday, April 7th. Michael Beller, Al Melchior here with you. And it is not just any day. It is not just Thursday, April 7th. It is 2022 opening day that we are celebrating here on the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. As we start this recording, 15 minutes away from first pitch of the 2022 season between the Cubs and the Brewers at Wrigley Field. So let's get pumped. Six great months, seven if you want to include the playoffs, of baseball ahead of us. Al, one of the best days of the year. How you doing?
It is. You wait all year for this. Well, you wait half the year for this. Yeah, right. It's still a lot of anticipation. So
a lot pretty of cool. Anticipation. Even more so this year than in recent years with just the strangeness of the last two seasons that we've had in Major League Baseball and then the lockout on top of all that. This 2022 season feeling like getting back to a normal baseball season for the first time since 2019. So very excited for that, very excited for the season, and very excited for this opening day episode of the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. As we told you last week, Thursday is going to be guest day on the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Joining us as our first guest of this 2022 season is Mike Kurland. If you are an Athletic subscriber, you've been reading all of his great work on The Athletic. Mike, what's going on, man? Thanks for joining us.
I'm very happy to be here. First time, so obviously it's a get the nerves out of the way, but obviously love talking baseball. Happy opening day. I can't stress it enough. It just feels like it took forever to get here, but we're here.
Yeah, it took, even on top of everything that we were waiting for, it took, what, like 10 days longer than we were expecting? So, hey, we had to wait for it. But, let me actually, before we get going, I don't know about you guys, but I kind of like this. I kind of like into April. This is when baseball always used to start, right? We got into April. I'm a big college basketball guy, so we got past the NCAA tournament, and now baseball gets to take center stage. I kind of like this this first week of April start rather than last week of March.
I do too, and I am a fan of the condensed spring training. I'm not sure that it's necessarily the best thing for the players, for the game, but as a fan, yeah, that short runway is pretty nice.
I can't argue, and what's sad is like I should argue because that's like most of my content, but I can't argue. I enjoy seeing everything just hurry up, and but the crazy part was obviously what threw everything off is we had like two trades, like big trades this week, by the way. Like what's going on? An opening day trade. When's the last time has that ever happened? Honestly, I can't think of a time I've ever heard that happen. So it's exciting. I feel like we need a signing period, but obviously this year was a little different. All things considered, though, me rambling away around to say, yes, I actually do agree. I am okay with the first week of April type of start. I was surprised. I thought we were going to end up being stuck waiting until May and so, but it was just, honestly, get that out of my head. We have baseball, and it's happening today. It's all I care about.
By the way, to answer Mike's question, the last time I remember an opening day trade, and I maybe I'm off by a day or two on this, but it was the Padres again getting a closer. Craig Kimbrel.
Kimbrel, yeah, the Kimbrel trade.
Now, I know Rodgers isn't necessarily the closer, but a little deja vu.
There you go. The Padres bringing us back. Gotta love that. Let's get into it, you guys. Mike, you referenced your content, and you are the lineup guru. You are the lineup guru, not only at The Athletic, but across the fantasy baseball universe. And that's what we're going to talk about on this episode of TAFBP. Obviously, there's so many things we could get into. Baseball is a long season for a reason, and we're going to be getting into that all season long. But opening weekend, you know, some teams are going to start putting down markers as to what their lineups are going to look like. And some of those are going to matter. Some of those aren't necessarily going to matter quite as much. Some of those are going to be matchup driven. Whatever the case may be, we're going to start getting those first bits of data as to how teams are really going to construct their 1-9 this season. So we thought it would be useful to talk about the teams that we are watching for their lineup deployments over this opening weekend. And let's just start with the first game of the day. It's Cubs and Brewers. The Cubs are a team that we know are going to be flexible in their lineup. And so we're going to take a look at them first, just as a reference, some of the guys who could be in and out of the lineup who are playing today. Rafael Ortega starting at leading off as the Cubs DH. Seiya Suzuki we know is going to be in the lineup every day. He's hitting sixth today. Jason Hayward, unfortunately for a Cubs fan like me, in the lineup in the seventh spot. Mike, what are you looking for with this team?
Well, you mentioned part of it is just that it's kind of a crowded situation. And I'm not sure Ortega is going to run with this leadoff spot, although I did like him as a streaming option this weekend because they're facing four righties. So Ortega, if he's going to lead off and get short run, at least he'll get four. Now, it's not the best matchups for him, but he should see four starts top of this lineup. Madrigal batting second is actually notable because I wasn't sure if he was going to bat second with Ortega or be stuck at the bottom. Mm-hmm. So that should add some potential for stolen bases for all of us stolen bases needy teams out there. Otherwise, Clint Frazier, VR, kind of, I feel like, and VR is one that's intriguing because his glove is not good. So maybe with a guy like Hendricks on the mound, with Stroman on the mound, maybe VR misses time and isn't an everyday player because they value defense better. And I know, although Wisdom isn't a good hitter in terms of like it's power or bust with him, mm-hmm. that glove is better at third base. So this team's one of those teams where I'm watching to see how they deploy their players based on maybe what pitcher's on the mound. Obviously handedness, will Frazier be more of a weak side platoon, maybe meander and get in there against some righties. There's a lot of that. There's a lot of like, and VR, what do we think? Is it like, do you plug and play him knowing he'll get some stolen bases via the pinch runner situation? He'll play maybe a majority of the time, but a lot to keep an eye out going forward here.
Yeah, VR is the player that I'm really interested mm-hmm. in watching over the first few games with the Cubs. Just figuring when the Cubs got him that he'd find the playing time one way or another, which is kind of what's happened in a lot of the situations he's wound up in. Can play several different positions, maybe not very well, but plays them. And like you said, pinch runner, DH possibility there. Doesn't seem like this Cubs lineup or roster is sufficiently deep to keep him from being the lineup. But I hadn't considered, Mike, the angle that you raised with that rotation having three ground ball pitchers up at the top of it. So that makes me feel a little discouraged going into opening day here with VR sitting in one of my lineups at least this week.
It popped into my head today. And I've been watching this all spring. Didn't think about it until today. And I was like, huh, Hendricks, ground ball. One of my concerns about VR was his bad defense, but it didn't even trigger, or the idea didn't even pop into my head thinking, wow, they actually do have a lot of ground ball dependent pitching. So I don't know. Yeah. It's an instinctive like, hey, let's just watch and see if that's actually going to be a thing or not.
Still think he finds his way into the lineup plenty with, you know, Wilson Contreras plays as much as a catcher can. Ian Happ, Seiya Suzuki. To me, those are really the only everyday dudes mm-hmm. in this lineup. So it's going to be interesting to see how they mix and match all these different playable pieces who don't demand everyday playing time that they have, right? It's going to be something that we're going to be watching very closely with this team. I want to throw over to one of the teams Al brought up to us, and that is the Detroit Tigers. Al, what are you most interested to see with this team and how they first start building their lineups?
Well, I'll pick up where we left off on a recent episode, Michael, which is our both of us wanting Spencer Torkelson to be higher up in the lineup than we've seen him hit a lot in these spring training games. So that's a question for me. And also, now I didn't draft Miguel Cabrera anywhere, but he did hit in the thick of this order last year, was able to produce runs out of that position. He's been batting in the middle of the lineup in spring training frequently. So, you know, I'm wondering if maybe there's a play to be made on waivers to pick Cabrera up just for the run production possibilities.
Yeah, I don't know. I want to believe. Like, obviously, the feel good story would be Miggy having another year, but I feel like we always want that, and it just doesn't seem to happen. I'm just wondering now, when you throw Meadows into the situation, obviously he should slot into the middle of that order, give him a lefty bat with some pop there. Miggy, does he stick at five? Does he move to six with Candelario, the switch hitter there? I think Badu feels a little safer with as long, for now, but Victor Reyes is still a thing, and he is better against lefties. Will he platoon with Badu, Meadows? That's kind of, I'm just watching to see how they handle those guys. I think Badu might get a little bit of early run against lefties to see how he handles them, and if he starts struggling, insert Victor Reyes here. But yeah, it's kind of the same thing. Torque's going to have to hit his way up the lineup, and then obviously far down the road, because I would assume with the Meadows trade, Green's injury might linger longer than we anticipate. Maybe that's when we'll have to figure out how Green factors in. But ultimately, does Miggy end up losing DH reps to Meadows when Riley Green returns? That's, again, something down the line, but worth thinking about.
Yeah, definitely worth having in the back of your mind. And yeah, totally, I think you nailed it on the head there, Mike. Torkelson's going to have to hit his way up the lineup. Nothing's going to be just assumed for him. If it was going to be assumed, it would have been assumed by now. He would be in their opening day lineup as, like, you know, a guy in the top third of the order. And that's just not going to happen. So he's going to have to hit. He's going to have every opportunity to hit his way up the lineup. So that certainly is something that's pretty fun for us. Mike, let's take a look at a team that is not going to get their start until tomorrow in this 2022 season. That's the Miami Marlins. Let's take a look at this team and just considering what we're going to be looking at when we see their lineup today and when we take a look at their first weekend or week's worth of lineups.
So the big one here is obviously, I think it's obvious, is Jazz Chisholm. Like, I even thought he's going to be leading off against righties, maybe fall towards the bottom against lefties. And then Soler signed, and Soler started leading off day one. I'm like, okay, cool, this is him getting reps. Except for we saw Soler continue to lead off all but one start this spring. And then Chisholm, after Soler started getting in lineups, never hit above fifth. And fifth was in lineups where they didn't even have a full lineup in. When they had full lineups in, it was like seventh or lower. And this included righties and lefties. It didn't matter. So I'm thinking that's where he starts. Now, the tools are still going to be electric. Chisholm's still going to hit for power, hit a little bit of power, have some speed. It's just the counting stats around that. And another guy that we're going to see him hit his way up or an injury open up, which Garrett Cooper seems to be slotted into the two, which is very intriguing because he's a guy that no one's really talking about. He is a bit of an afterthought, Garrett Cooper is, but Cooper still has that power and can be a four-category contributor, all things considered, and you're getting him in the two spot. And he's not really rostered. At least he was more of a late-round guy or a fab pickup this first round of fab. But this lineup seems pretty set, all things considered. It's just that I'm really watching how Jazz handles year two, and maybe does he face this with adversity, or does he get discouraged? In spring, he already had like 11 strikeouts and just 32 or 34 plate appearances. So we see the swing and miss is still there, but is it the same type of swing and miss? Is it swing and miss because of passivity, or is it swing and miss because he just has holes in a swing? Because last year he had some swinging strike rate issues, but it wasn't terrible. Like I don't know. So I'm just watching. It's a lot of Jazz Chisholm watch here.
It's a lot at stake for him. I mean, let's be honest about it. Because one versus five, one versus bottom third, that is a huge difference for anyone. But when you just consider how Jazz is going to be contributing to fantasy teams, it's a bigger gap for him than, like, for example, we were just talking about wanting to see Spencer Torkelson higher in the order. There's more at stake for Jazz, one versus five, than there would be for Torkelson, you know, two versus six, two versus seven, something like that.
I agree.
And I'm just interested, too. I know this is slightly off topic because we're talking about batting order and lineup construction, but I'm also just interested to see how he comes out of the gate because, of course, last year he was unstoppable for, you know, the first month or so, and then tailed off really badly. But the one thing that I do find encouraging is that in the second half, when the numbers overall weren't very good, he was hitting for a ton of power. He was averaging around 96 miles an hour on flies and liners. And so if he just makes a little bit more contact, that could be huge. And it would be hard to keep him out of the top half of the lineup if he makes that change.
Here's a lineup that both you guys wanted to talk about. I keep the people separate, see what they do on their own, and then bring it together and see what they both name. How about these New York Yankees, Al? This is going to be a lineup that, again, has a lot, sort of like the Cubs, in that there's a lot of mixing and matching parts, different from the Cubs in that their mixing and matching parts are a whole lot better than what the Cubs are going to be putting out there. So what are we looking for this first set of Yankees lineups?
Yeah, mostly it's exactly the thing that you're mentioning, the players specifically that don't seem to have settled roles. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, DJ LeMahieu, maybe Gleyber Torres. Just see how that whole infield situation shakes out, because everything else looks pretty stable. And I think LeMahieu is really the wild card here, because if he does play regularly and with that regular play rebounds from last season, then I doubt he's out there in very many leagues, but certainly those who drafted him are going to feel really good about that. Maybe in some shallower leagues, LeMahieu would be available. So I'm very interested in seeing how that plays out.
Absolutely. I'll hit the nail on the head on this one. It's a matter of I don't even know if we have five players for four spots, because the shortstop, they've been pretty vocal there. Boone mentioned Torres is the backup shortstop. Like, he said that. There's a quote. I have it somewhere. I put it in one of the articles, too. So it's there. It's known that. And Torres is terrible in the field. IKF actually had a decent spring, if I recall, too. I'm looking up his numbers right now. Yeah, he hit .394 this spring. Now, it's just spring training. But in 35 plate appearances, Falefa, IKF, it's simple that way. IKF did put out a decent line, and this is a team that can afford to take the lesser bat for the better glove.
Right.
And shortstop is an area of need, or has been in the past, especially with Torres there. So I think it's more DJ LeMahieu versus Rizzo versus Torres versus Donaldson, which can figure itself out via injury with this lineup. I get that. And the DH, I think they're going to eventually just rotate everybody to keep them all healthy. But that includes keeping DJ healthy. Because DJ's coming off a year where, we're on a first name basis. He's coming off a year where he dealt with injury himself and underperformance, which probably played hand in hand. So I'm thinking we get a few less games out of LeMahieu, and that in general takes away a little bit of his potential for fantasy, because we're talking about one of the ultimate compilers in fantasy in terms of games played and stats produced. With him, it goes hand in hand. So if you're taking away even one game a week, and sometimes two, if it's a fully, I know it's a fully healthy lineup, it's very rare for the Yankees, but maybe early on it is fully healthy. And now you're looking at a guy that, when do you start him, especially in weekly formats? Do you start him? He could possibly miss one out of four here, one out of three over the weekend. Do you prefer a guy that might play the extra game? It becomes a headache outside of daily formats now.
Yeah. And I mean, I think we could be saying that about a lot of guys on this team. Now, they're all still really good on a per game basis, and so you're going to want them, but like, do you like Donaldson, Rizzo, Hicks, LeMahieu, even Tor, like, do you feel great about any of these guys being in the lineup every day other than like Judge and Stanton? I'm not sure you do.
And even Stanton, because like, they want to play him in the field more. Are they going to rest him instead of just DH him?
Yeah.
It's a good problem to have for the Yankees in real life.
Oh, for sure.
It's a
and that's another thing. That's another thing too, right? Like this team, whether they win 104 or 100 or 94, like whatever, they just want to get to the postseason and get this team healthy into the postseason. And so like, there's going to be some like NBA style rest days, I feel like, for this team.
Yeah. And that's what I'm getting at. I think LeMahieu's going to fall into that. Not only will he benefit from it, and it'll keep him in the lineup plenty, regardless of who's the odd man out. I think everyone's going to play like five games a week. That's the problem. I think everyone's going to play five games a week.
Right.
That's where it's like, yeah, cool. Everyone's going to play, but everyone's going to play. So like, for someone who's flashier with tools, five games a week for Stanton, Torres, Donaldson, that's fine. Five games a week for DJ, again, first name basis, that's not. So that's where I get kind of like, again, it's more of a gut feeling. And then, of course, the very last spring training lineup, they gave us Torres at shortstop, LeMahieu at second, and a full starting lineup. I'm like, maybe. But IKF did start the game before, the two games before, so maybe it was just more of a rest day for him leading into the season. However, it's just one of those things where that last lineup, maybe it's IKF. I just don't see them leaving the good glove out for another good bat. That they just don't need another bat in that lineup.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, Mike, let's get back to one of the teams that we are going to see today on Thursday. That is the St. Louis Cardinals. That is a lineup we are going to see in just a few hours from when we're recording. We have that opening day lineup in hand for this St. Louis team. What jumps out to you about today, and what about that maybe gives us a window into what we're going to see from this team in the future?
The big thing that I think everyone's noticing, and kind of like, even though they were showing it to us, they didn't quite believe it, but we saw three lineups total with Carlson and Edman in, that Carlson actually flip-flopped with Edman batting at the top of the lineup. So Carlson, the leadoff man, is something we are seeing now on opening day. And Edman, it's beyond just he lost the job. He's also it's going to kill me who tweeted out the article, who wrote about it. It's one of their main guys over there, beat writer-wise. Gould, I think it was.
Yep,
he put out an article that told that basically they're aware that Edmund's struggling, but it's not just struggles like, oh, he needs to clear his head. It's mechanical struggles from the left side of the plate, which kind of hinted at, oh, not only are they moving him down, but now he has stuff to figure it out. They're going to let him figure it out at the big league level, it looks like. However, it's just they're going to let him figure it out at the bottom of the lineup. And if he figures it out, maybe he hits his way up. But even then, the double leadoff thing, now that there's no pitcher in the NL, that's probably going to keep Edman down there, and maybe at best move him up to second. But that's assuming that other people, that's assuming a lot of things happen in his favor. So I think that's the big takeaway. If Pujols batting fifth, I wouldn't get used to. I think this is more of a, hey, it's opening day, welcome back to St. Louis. It's a righty on the mound, but we're going to platoon you normally. That's my gut. I don't think they went out of their way to get Dickerson to not make this like a lefty righty platoon at DH. I could be wrong, but Pujols, I don't think batting fifth is going to stick, but that's kind of the two big things here. The rest is kind of as expected.
Yeah, that was my question, was where Pujols is going to hit and how often he's going to play. That just didn't look right, but we shall see. I think, Mike, you're probably right about that.
Yeah, would be stunned. This is a homecoming opening day start for Albert Pujols, for sure. Let's go over to the AL West here. Al, you've got a couple of teams on this. A's and Astros, teams you want to take a look at with what they're going to be doing this opening weekend. Why don't we start with the A's here? What are we looking at with this team that we know a whole lot different than what they looked like over these last few years with all the trades and waving a white flag on, I don't know, the next three seasons, whatever the case might be for these Oakland A's? What are you interested to see from this team?
Well, just a more general comment, which is I'm really interested in a lot of these teams that are not going to contend, like the A's, like the Pirates, because it looks like it could really just kind of be just, you know, a lot of wild cards, a lot of moving parts, and see who steps up. But a couple of players that I'd be interested in seeing getting more of a chance, Sheldon Noisy and Chad Pinder. And I understand that, you know, Pinder has played this this role where he's on the small side of the platoon, and he seems to be pretty much fixed in that role. But looking at his splits, I mean, I just don't think it would be terrible for him to play more against righties. I mean, it's more of a BABIP issue for him than the quality of contact, and not a question of an utter lack of power or an utter lack of contact skills against right-handed pitching. He's got some of the best power on this roster. So I'm really interested to see if there's any sort of daylight for him to get regular playing time. I'd like to see Noisy get a legitimate shot to play with some regularity in the major leagues. He hasn't had that yet, and it seems like this is a roster where that could happen.
Yeah, I'm just looking. I don't see how, like, I looked at roster resource, and I don't understand why Vogt is expected to be the strong side platoon with Pinder, I would guess. I was looking at the platoon, trying to look at the platoon, and I think, and Seth Brown would be the other one, so I guess maybe Seth Brown, but I don't know if, I think Pinder's going to be given more of a chance to start, at least that's my two cents. I could obviously be wrong there. I don't know. I don't see why they would hold back, see what they have in Pinder versus trotting out Vogt every day. Kevin Smith is the big one here. I just want to see how he performs. I think he's like underappreciated. He's still, although he was getting some draft hype towards the end, he's still pretty under, like, no one's really talking about him. The name itself is boring, Kevin Smith, but it's there's a little bit of power, a little bit of speed, decent hit tool, the skill, and overall plate discipline tools in the minors, in the high minors at that. So assuming he plays often, and third base being what it is, Smith could be an interesting, I have him in some deeper formats as a starter this week because I'm desperate, but he's a guy that I really have my eye on.
Al mentioned the Pirates there too, and that was someone that you had emailed me about, Mike. So what are we looking for in Pittsburgh?
Well, apparently Diego Castillo's not starting today. I don't know how that happened. I mean, you hit six spring home runs and you're playing for a team like the Pirates and you can't start. That just seems like an error. Other than that, apparently Vogelbach is a leadoff hitter. 2022, I never thought I'd say that.
How about that? The Cubs system churning out mashing leadoff hitters. Vogelbach, Schwarber, Jorge Soler. They're not none of them for the Cubs, but look at all these ex-Cubs.
Yeah, right, exactly how you planned it, right? Yeah. Vogelbach, though, the leadoff man against righties, I guess I see it. I doubt he'll sit there or even close to the top against lefties, but this is a lineup filled with opportunity. You have Hoy Park starting at second base today. I had no idea who to peg as the starting second baseman at all this whole spring. Park kind of played there a lot, but then you saw Castillo, Tucker. You saw them all bounce around there. So other than 2-3-4 in that lineup, Reynolds, Hayes, and Susugo, it's kind of still like a mixed bag, especially when Allen and Alfred return. But I would like to see Castillo's usage. Obviously, it's not off to a good start, but the guy had such a flashy spring, some fun tools there, showed to grow into some power last year in the minors for the first time in his career. So I would like to see if that can materialize in anything, but obviously the Pirates don't want to see it.
Michael Beller and I, we're Team Cole Tucker, or at least we were a couple years ago. So maybe
he should play every day. He should get the playing time finally.
Yeah. Not sure I'm on the team anymore. Not sure.
Taxi squad.
Not so sure about that one. Let's take a look. Let's see. I'm scanning our lists here. You know what? Let's go. We've hit on the A's. We've hit on the Pirates. Let's go to a team that we think is going to be good. Mike, I'm going to go back to you here. Toronto Blue Jays. This team is going to hit the hell out of the ball. We know that. But what do we look for from a lineup context?
There's no lefties, except for Biggio. But I don't really count him because he's batting like ninth. There's no lefties, although there are some reverse splits guys, which I've noticed. Like, I know Vlad, although Vlad hits everybody, he actually hits righties better. I think a couple others are like that as well in this lineup. But still, no lefties is weird, so I thought they would maybe go sign someone. Conforto makes a lot of sense, but I don't know Conforto's vaccination status. I can't talk.
Oh, boy. Even slowing it down.
Vaccination status. There we go. We got it. Tongue twister. Woo! And that's his business. This is fantasy. I don't get involved in that stuff, honestly. But that could be a holdup here, obviously, because he can't play there if he's not vaccinated. So the fit makes too much sense. But anyway, getting back on the track here with this lineup, it's the DH spot. How are they going to utilize it? That's my biggest question. I think they're going to use it as a way to keep everyone healthy because you have Teoscar Hernandez coming off a little minor wrist thing this spring. He played through at the end, no problem. Springer with his chronic illnesses, I should call them, lack of health overall lately. I think it's just going to be a lot of that. I know Kirk makes a lot of sense there, but backup catching / DHing a couple times a week. Mm-hmm. He's not going to need much more to be relevant in leagues as a catcher, but it's unfortunate because that bat would play better if it had more full-time run behind it. So the DH spot, I just really want to see how that is utilized this season.
And maybe that's a way to get Raimel Tapia in there at least a little bit. And I'm very invested in finding some kind of rationale for the Blue Jays to use him since I drafted Tapia when he was still a Rocky. So that's probably the best way, either him as a DH or more likely maybe moving one of the outfielders into the DH slot to get Tapia in there, get another lefty bat into that lineup.
That's exactly how. Fourth outfield type, which again, we talked about Springer's issues, and then the lefty bat. It's an underappreciated part of what could factor in him getting in the lineup more. Maybe not regularly, but at least more, because there is no lefty. But again, what are they going to do? Have back-to-back lefties at the bottom of the order? Like, that's where it's like, where are they going to bat him? Maybe seventh, like just to give him lefty-righty-lefty at the end? But that's the thing. It's like, his bat, like the lefty bat is in his favor, but at the same time, is it really when it comes to this lineup?
Yeah, it's a good question and a fair question. To be sure. Al, I want to move us over to the Kansas City Royals, a team that we're going to see a couple of hours from now, at least from the moment of me saying this very sentence here. No surprises at the top of their opening day lineup. Whit Merrifield, Bobby Witt Jr., Andrew Benintendi, Salvador Perez. Two guys, however, that we do think about with this team when it comes to playing time. Edward Olivares, Kyle Isbell, neither of which are in the opening day lineup. I mean, how much do we want to see from them to think of them as, you know, fantasy relevant contributors?
I would certainly like to see what happens in the next week or so with both Isbell and Olivares. And I can understand maybe not even paying attention to Olivares because we we got tricked so many times last year into thinking, okay, here's the latest call up. They're going to find a role for him, and it just never happened. But you know, Isbell played well when he was brought back up late in the season. I don't know that, you know, somebody like Hunter Dozier is necessarily a major obstacle here. So I think it'll be interesting to see what kind of start Dozier gets off to. I'm not really sure who else we'd be looking at here. I suppose Michael Taylor, you know, for the defense is not necessarily somebody who would move. But yeah, I'd certainly, and I don't think I'm alone here, would like to see both of those players get at least some semi-regular playing time.
Yeah, and then you have the prospects on the brink, right? You have Melendez, you have Pascatino. I can't say that. Pascatino, I think. Mm-hmm. I'm terrible with names, I apologize. And then obviously there's one more. I can't think of his name. The first base, Prado. So you have those guys also fighting for a chance to come up. All of them, especially Melendez, proves to at least be somewhat ready. So now does Dozier struggle? Do they fill within or do they go to the minors? So it's like even with a potential clear path, it's not completely clear. So it's like, I agree that those guys would be fun, especially all of ours after the strong spring. I just don't know, other than, especially because of those guys on the brink, especially if Dozier, they're going to give them at least 2 weeks of run. That might be long enough to where these guys get that extra year. Now they're ready to knock on the door. And Royals, it's like, it's one of the more set lineups, but mm-hmm. at the same time, how long can Santana hold on to first base? I know they're paying Dozier and Santana, and mm-hmm. that could matter for a team like this, but how long can they really hold back all these other guys that we've talked about now? Four or five other names that potentially should be on this lineup or in this roster somehow, somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, that's what makes so much of this so much fun, is that we can we're going to learn a lot over these first few weeks, at least in terms of playing time, lineup deployment, all sorts of things like that. Mike, let's talk about a team that is already in action now as we are talking here. The Milwaukee Brewers were ready to hit on their opponent today. The Cubs, the Brewers. Actually, guys, I saw while we were recording, first pitch of the season was a Colton Wong pop-out. Very first pitch of the season. So how about that? That's how we got the 2022 Major League Baseball season off to a start with Colton Wong leading off. What are we looking for in Milwaukee, Mike?
Oh, Colton Wong was in my guys article, so I was hoping he would pop one over the fence, but pop out, whatever, I'll take it. I think we're getting a good idea. I know I'm a little surprised McCutchen's already DHing against a righty in the middle of the order, when I assumed this team was going to be pretty platoon heavy and maybe platoon McCutchen a little more than just straight up, hey, here's the job. But it looks like it's his job run with, in terms of mostly every day, because they're going to utilize the DH here in Milwaukee pretty liberally, I would think, you know, between getting Yelich days off, Kane days off, maybe keeping their bats in the lineup. So McCutchen batting fourth was kind of like a pleasant surprise. I have him on no teams, go figure. But I am curious, because I know Urias is due back, but I think in the meantime, Jace Peterson will platoon on the strong side with Brousseau, platooning on the weak side there. Other than that, it's kind of like, how can we get Tyron Taylor in there, please? Keston Hira had a strong spring.
Are you listening, Craig Counsell?
Yeah, Keston Hira had a strong spring, but he showed some strikeout issues again in the spring. So, again, what type of strikeouts? Were they swing and miss, or were they passivity? And there's a little bit of, like, we got to see how. I've never gone back to look. Maybe DVR might have watched more of the spring training. And I don't know, you're a Cubs fan. You probably didn't watch as much of the Brewers. But I'm curious. I am, because what if Hira's strikeouts were more of the called strikes type of strikeouts, not the, hey, swing and miss strikes? So there is a difference in terms of what causes strikeouts in spring. You never know,
right,
unless you watch the tape.
Right,
but yeah, it's a matter of just, again, watching how they factor in these other players, and then Luis Urias when he's healthy, all that good stuff.
Yeah, that's, you know, those bench players that are going to be the ones to watch to see if they can get a larger role. I think Hira is really key here. Victor Caratini, that was a very interesting pickup late, just before. That just looks like a straight platoon situation to catcher, but Caratini has played some first base, and so that could be really a wide open situation there at first.
Could be. I feel like most of his first base was somewhat necessity driven. Both in Chicago and San Diego.
Yeah, perhaps, but that, you know, that's just it's a thing he's got in his tool bag would allow him to get into
the
lineup a little bit.
Quite literally has a first base glove, quite literally in his bag.
There you go. That's all. That's all he really needs.
There you go. Absolutely. You know, who else has a first baseman's mitt in his bag? It's Pete Alonso, and he's going to be in there every single day for the New York Mets. But Al, what else are we looking for out of these Mets?
It's the usual. Dominic Smith, J.D. Davis. Are they going to be able to stick as regulars? Robinson Cano probably has something to do with that. So you've got a little bit of a log jam with those three players, and I think that. You know, it's a situation that if somebody doesn't step up, it's going to be damaging to the fantasy value of all three. So certainly interested to see if anybody can emerge out of that group.
Yeah, I'm not sure what to expect. I know Dom Smith has been pretty vocal about wanting to be an everyday player. I don't think they're as behind that as he wants them to be. But he should at least play every day against righties, right? I mean, Cano shouldn't be in his way, but will he? They're paying him all that money still, I believe. So, I mean, could that factor? I don't know if this team cares about money. Obviously, there's a tax bracket just for them, and they don't care. But Nimmo, how long is he? Is he going to be out? How long is he going to be out?
Yeah.
McNeil led off the final two games of the preseason, of the spring training, I should say. Does that matter? Was that reps? Was that a foretelling situation? Is McNeil going to get a chance to run with some leadoff at-bats? If he runs with it and does well, does he stick? That's a lot. There's some stuff there to, you know, pay attention to. I mean, other than that, though, but I think you hit it on hit the nail on the head. Al, you're good at this. It's almost like you do this for a living, Al.
It's weird.
But it's weird, I know. But yeah, I think that's pretty much it. I just wanted to bring up the whole McNeil factor possibly leading off, and who knows how long of a run that is. Because, you know, necks can linger with hitters, especially because you need that to hit.
Yeah. I mean, so, and the leadoff spot on this team could be very interesting. When you can, like, when you're talking about hitting in front of Starling Marte, Francisco Lindor, Pete Alonso, some combination of, you know, Cano, Escobar, J.D. Davis, Dom Smith, like there's a lot of guys who can drive you in if you can get on base consistently for the Mets as a leadoff man.
Yeah, that's exactly why I thought McNeil's worth at least monitoring, see how they plug and play him early on. Again, assuming Nimmo misses some time, but that's, I don't know, I haven't seen him placed on the IL or anything. I haven't seen a real update of him today, so unless I'm missing something. Please let me know. But if not, I mean, as of right now, it's kind of like a Nimmo watch. Like, will he start? Will he not? And even if he does, I don't know if I'm going to start him in leagues where I would have to, like maybe NFBC, like deeper formats, if I can avoid it, just in case there's a setback and then he misses the other two games this series. One of those things, I want to see him healthy first. Mm-hmm.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
Which little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
All right, guys, we're just about wrapping up here. Let's get in a last word. Mike, you start us off here. Anything else that we haven't already touched on that you're going to be watching for from a lineup context position this weekend?
Oh, man. the Dodgers, okay. The Dodgers intrigue me. I want to see Lux's usage versus Rios. I know Lux seems to be in the driver's seat there. I just think Rios is more deserving coming out of the strong spring. And we saw Rios have, you know, some success at the major league level, albeit I believe it was a shortened 2020 season prior to being injured in 2021, trying to play through it and struggling. So Rios, because my theory was Rios could play third base. They can move Muncy, where they've been playing him at third base all spring, over to second. DH Turner, and then move Taylor to the outfield, Lux suddenly doesn't have a spot. So I just want to see how they utilize that. Do they mix and match Lux and Rios? Does Lux just get early run to see what they got in them? I'm not a Lux guy. I do know Nando is, and I'm like, sorry, Nando, that's not for me. But I gotta stick to my guns on that one. So it's just more or less, how are the Dodgers gonna utilize Lux, and how long of a leash do they give him if they do let him start from day one?
All right, Al, how about you? A last word, anything that's on your mind as we get ready for opening day and opening weekend?
Well, I feel like I should circle back because you did team me up to talk about the Astros, and then I forgot to talk about them. So I think there's a couple of interesting things there in terms of where Kyle Tucker is going to bat, because that was variable during spring training. And that center field situation still looks like it's up for grabs. Jose Siri played a lot down the last week or so, and I know I was looking more at Chaz McCormick in deep drafts than Jose Siri, but he's an interesting power source for waivers if he does wind up playing a lot in the first few games. So I'll definitely be watching that situation.
Hey, ending with the Astros and Dodgers, a lot of baseball seasons could end that way. This baseball season could certainly be one that ends with the Astros and Dodgers. Mike Kirtland, obviously follow him along at the Athletic all season long. You can also follow him on Twitter at Mike_Kurland, KURLAND. Mike, thanks so much for being with us on the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast.
No, it's truly a pleasure. Thank you, guys. This is one of those bucket list pods that I wanted to get on. So thank you for letting me get on and be a part of it.
Hey, man, we are happy to have you on. Anywhere else that people can find you this baseball season?
Honestly, if you just find me on Twitter, I'm always tweeting something, doing something. I'm always I guess Bases Loaded Podcast is one I've been a part of. I started a long time ago. Co-host of mine, George Montanez, too. So that's the podcast. But other than that, really, just on Twitter, like you mentioned, is probably the best way to get a hold of me and see what I have going on.
Use Mike's lineup tool. It is awesome.
Absolutely. Use that to your extreme fantasy baseball advantage. That's going to do it for this opening day edition of the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Thanks to all of you out there for joining us. For Mike and Al, I am Michael Beller. Thanks for listening. We'll be talking to you soon. Alan DVR back at you tomorrow with a waiver wire episode. So get ready for that and have a great opening weekend.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.